American woman. It's the Kim Munson Show.
The Washington Times said the patriotic Americans donated U.S. flags after protesters raised the Mexican flag over the ICE facility.
Analyzing the most important stories.
It is not fair that people come in illegally and they have 3 square meals a day, TVs and all. There's something that is wrong with this picture.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
When we get into conversations with people, you can get real bombastic with each other because you haven't read it. You don't know what you're talking about.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
So if you understand the issue, then you can have calm, reasonable conversations.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
And happy Thursday. Welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter there on the website. We'll keep you apprised of all the upcoming guests. Our op-eds are rolled out there, as well as our Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. We've got a great show planned for you today. We're going to go through some headlines in this first segment. Second segment, Dr. Jill Vecchio. We'll talk about this COVID-19 testing. We're seeing all kinds of testing results on the media now, and some of the politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties are using that to shut down their cities, their municipalities, their counties, their states again. So that'll be a really important conversation. And then Tom Petrie with Petrie Partners, which is an oil and gas investment banking firm, will be joining us for our health and hydrocarbon show in the third and fourth segments. Joe Biden is just rolling out his platform, and it's important that we understand what that might mean for us as everyday people who like efficient, affordable, and reliable energy. So, producer Steve, how are you doing this morning?
Very good. Okay. I'm not going to say locked and loaded again, because I paid the price for that earlier this week.
Yes, you did. So I'd love to say thank you to this team that I get to work with, and that is Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, and Charlie. And each of you listeners, really enjoy hearing from you. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com. And today, you've got a purpose. Go out and strive for excellence. Take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body. So our quote for today, our wisdom /inspiration comes to us from Alexander Hamilton. Now, granted, there is a Broadway play about him now, but Alexander Hamilton was an American statesman, politician, legal scholar, military commander, lawyer, banker, and economist. He was one of the founding fathers of the United States. He was an influential interpreter and promoter of the U.S. Constitution, as well as the founder of the nation's financial system, the Federalist Party, the United States Coast Guard, and the New York Post newspaper. And he said this, Steve. He said, "The truth unquestionably is that the only path to a subversion of the Republican system of the country is by flattering the prejudices of the people and exciting their jealousies and apprehensions to throw affairs into confusion and bring on civil commotion." What do you think of that?
Okay, you can hear me chuckling, but it's not because it's humorous funny. It is incredibly, longtime listeners to our show know that we do these quotes, and there is a huge chance that even though the words are 200 plus years old, they will be very applicable to what's happening now.
And do you not see that going on right now? He was born in 1755, and he died in 1804. But once again, that last part, it says that in the Republican system of the country is by flattering the prejudices of the people and exciting their jealousies or their envy and their apprehensions, fear, you can throw the affairs into confusion and bring on civil commotion. And that is what is going on, I think, today in our country right now, Steve.
What is that name that we give to the organization that we feel is really running things in a, you know,
the deep state?
Thank you. Obviously, the leadership of the deep state, and I won't name names, has latched onto those things.
And the deep state runs across parties. And Donald Trump has come in and really shaken things up, and they don't like that. And this is one of the most important elections of our nation, I think. And two guys that are stepping forward is my new friends, Reggie Carr and Johnny Thomas, with I'm a Trumpster. They have been in the entertainment business, in the black entertainment business, for many years. They are putting together this bus that they're going to take into ethnic communities to encourage them to vote to become a Trumpster. I'm a Trumpster. And we are going to have a party with the bus. We're still working on the date on that. But we would really appreciate you helping us raise the money to do the vinyl wrap on the bus. Reggie and Johnny have financed 98% of all this with their own money. It's time for us grassroots people to step up and help them. So go to imatrumpster.com, contribute. For every $50 you contribute, you'll receive one of their very cool battle masks. And then just email me at kim@kimmunson.com and let me know that you did that. And we'll keep you informed on everything that's going on. So let's jump into a few headlines here.
Hey, before you...
Oh, yeah?
Something that you just said regarding... You know, this election that's coming, it's 112 days away or something like that. How many times in our lifetime and just in the last couple of decades that we, as we approach an election, we will say, boy, this is probably the most important election of our lifetime. And you want to say, well, why do we keep saying that? And I think about it and say, as this whole situation degrades more and more, that's why it's more important than the last. Even though the last one was very important, it was only up to that time. And now we, you know, degrade some more in our culture and the way things are going and spiraling out of control. Okay, now this one's more important than the last.
Well, you know, Donald Trump, like him or leave him, whatever you prefer, whether or not you like him or not, he has brought clarity to these issues. All of this stuff that is happening has been percolating underneath the surface. And we now see the choice that we have to make. And that choice is that the American idea of liberty, that all men are created equal, and that we have these inalienable rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, or is it destruction and envy and divisiveness? I mean, it is, as Reagan said, it is a time for choosing, Steve.
Go back to that quote that you just read.
Yes, and yes.
You just paraphrased it, whether you were wanting to or not. You just paraphrased that quote.
I guess I did. So let's run in and do at least a couple of headlines here. One of them, Patty found, this was from The Chieftain. And it says that health department, Pueblo businesses are ignoring health orders. They're going to face consequences. Says many Pueblo County businesses are closely adhering to COVID-19 rules and regulations, but some aren't doing as good of a job. And to those who aren't, the city and county want them to know they're watching and will be enforcing the state-mandated public health orders. Mayor Nick Gratisar announced on Friday that some of the $5.4 million the city has received from the Federal CARES Act will be used immediately to hire 10 COVID-19 educator and compliance technicians who will go out in the community to restaurants, bars, and other businesses to educate them on the guidelines for safely conducting business in the era of COVID-19 and what's required by the state. And Randy Evets, the public health director for the Pueblo Department of Public Health and Environment, said the health department will continue to investigate all reports of violations of public health orders. He said the goal is for businesses to voluntarily comply, but those that continue to ignore the orders will be issued a notice of violation and can face a court appearance and or fine. So isn't that sweet? They get some of the CARES money, and they're going to use that money to go out and spy on citizens and businesses. And if they don't do what they say that they want you to do, if you give up your liberties there, they're going to fine these businesses and say they're in violation. What's your thoughts on that, Steve?
You said, let's talk about this. And I came and rushing back in here and went down to that part in the package that Patty sends us every day, and I just about fell out of my chair. Talk about bloating a bureaucracy. So we're going to take, what was the whole function of the Federal CARES Act?
To help small businesses.
During
the COVID-19 shutdown.
All right, so we're going to take some of those monies and basically pump them right back in
to a bureaucracy.
To enhance this bureaucracy and make people comply. Okay.
It should put the fear of God in each and every one of us, Steve. So, but let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk with Jill Vecchio on this testing. Before we do it, though, Hooters Restaurants is one of my valued partners. They have 5 different locations: Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And they have happy hour, 3 to 6 p.m. It would be just great to go out and sit out on the deck, and I think we're going to have some sports here soon. And they have lunch specials and a beer of the month. So be sure to go to order.hooters.com for more information, and just treat yourself. We'll be right back with Dr. Jill Vecchio.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lorne Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lorne Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lorne Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lorne Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter where we have our upcoming guests, our podcasts, as well as our op-eds. And go over to Facebook and give us a like. Thrilled to have on the line with me Dr. Jill Vecchio. She is a radiologist, and she is an expert on healthcare policy. She was one of the few people in America that has read the complete Obamacare legislation. And so she read it, so she knows what's in it. But we're going to talk about testing, this testing for COVID-19. We see the increase in cases, and that seems to be the number that the pundits are putting on our all over the media. But what does that mean exactly? So Dr. Jill Vecchio, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Kim.
So what is going on?
This is some good.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, there's some really good information that I can tell people and try to put things into perspective, because it is being reported so poorly, non-uniformly across different states and areas, and what is considered a case can vary a great deal.
Okay.
There are two types of tests, two general categories of tests. One that tests for acute infection. In other words, you have the virus, whether or not you have symptoms, but you have and can be shedding or passing on virus to other people. That should be what is called a new case. That is the nasal swab testing. They have the rapid tests, things like that. That's mostly, but that's using a nasopharyngeal, so the back of your nose, swabs from the mucus and stuff in the back of your nose. And it has to be done properly. Anyway, so that's the acute infection testing. Then there's antibody testing. Now, you won't develop antibodies to any virus or bacteria. You're not going to develop antibodies usually for 10 to 14 days, sometimes up to 24 days. The antibody test is done with blood, either from a finger stick or a blood draw. The finger sticks may be less accurate than the blood draws. So those are blood draw tests that can take usually 1 or 2 days. There are different kinds of assays, so it's a more complicated test. That tests for whether or not there's an indication that you have been exposed to the virus and have therefore developed antibodies, whether or not you had symptoms. So let's look at who's getting tested. Different areas of different states are testing people completely differently. In some areas of a state, you don't get tested. You're not eligible for a test unless you have symptoms or you've been potentially exposed directly by someone. Other areas are doing mass testing, like around the packing plants in the Midwest. They go in with the testing kits, and they're testing every single employee. In some areas, everybody in a certain community is being, or almost everyone is being tested. So it's really all over the place as far as how you gather data from that and what that data will mean. as far as prevalence and what percentage of people have it and what percentage of people are really sick and so forth. So all of that data is not particularly useful when it's not put into that context. Am I making sense so far?
Yes, yes.
Okay. Now, the antibody tests are vary in their effectiveness. I looked on the WHO website, and there are at least 30 different tests available just for the antibodies. Over 30 different tests, three completely different categories of tests, and they still don't know, they haven't done enough research to know which tests are the best tests. There's a lot of variation in how well they're being performed, whether or not they're using the guidelines and so forth. It's kind of all over the place at this point. So not only do we have multiple different tests, we still don't know which tests are the best tests, and everybody's using different tests, and different states are using different tests. Some of the tests could cross-react with other types of coronavirus, which is the common cold.
Wow.
So we don't know that yet, how much cross-reactivity there may be. Now, granted, everything's happening so fast that you just want to get stuff out there and, then collect the data. But people need to understand that there's this huge variation in how things are being done. So when they say new cases, now on the CDC website, they've done another little trick. You know how I talked earlier about they combine for the flu numbers every year, they combine influenza-like illness because very few people are actually tested for influenza. But if they have the symptoms of flu-like illness and they present for medical care or whatever, then they're counted as in the flu numbers. If they die of pneumonia, regardless of whether it's from the flu, pneumonia death counts in the flu numbers every year. And we're not hearing people talk about that enough. I've heard it from a couple of people, but that is the fact. Very few people actually die of the flu, from the flu every year. Very few, less than a tenth of what, way less than a tenth, probably a quarter of a tenth. So, it's like maybe 2% or 3% of the number of people who are included in flu deaths and flu illness every year, maybe 3% of those deaths are actually from influenza. But that's how they use it. That's how they manipulate numbers to get us to take a vaccine every year and to make the flu seem like it's this big deal. Now, they're doing the same thing with the COVID numbers, and we know that you've already talked a lot about they're overinflating the numbers of hospitalizations. Just because they test positive for COVID doesn't mean you're in the hospital because of it, but there's reimbursement issues, so there's follow the money trail a bit with why people are incentivized to increase the seemingly the patient load and hospital load of COVID patients and the number of deaths. So we know that they've overestimated the number of deaths by 30%, 30 to 40%. So from what they're calling COVID deaths. So now the CDC is having to backtrack. Well, now, according to the CDC website, in a lot of their graphs and a lot of their figures, they're combining influenza-like illness and COVID-like illness. They're combining those numbers now. So they are manipulating data, and this is the CDC. This is not scientific. This is not any kind of a scientific process.
And you've looked at this, Jill. You've seen this.
I'm on the websites. I'm on WHO websites, the CDC websites, some of the state websites. Yeah, COVID data tracker, Johns Hopkins. Yeah, I'm on. These are real websites, and if people go to these websites, you have to know how to interpret what they're saying, and you have to kind of know what to look for, but it's right there. They're combining these numbers in a bunch of these graphs. Now, let's talk about new cases. So when they say new cases, and here's an example so people can get an idea of the proportion. As of the week of ending 4th of July, according to the CDC website, 22 million tests tests were done, 2.1 million were positive. That's not 2.1 million new cases. They're combining. They don't separate the acute virus test from the antibody test.
And then they're using...
They're combining those numbers.
So they're combining those numbers, and then politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties are using those numbers to come out and scare people again and shut down economies. And and it's because the numbers are being manipulated. Jill, we've got 1 minute left, and we're going to be doing some you're one of our podcast stars on the Sounding Off with Kim Munson. But what's the one thing that you'd like our listeners to take home today from our conversation?
A test is not a case. If they have new positive tests, is not the same as new people who have the disease. And positive, and the death numbers are probably more like 0.5%, and they're going down. This data is being manipulated by Anthony Fauci and his group at the CDC, in my very, very strong opinion, in order to abide by an agenda. And the idea that a non-physician president of the United States is the only person who's standing out and trying to point this out to people is pathetic. I find it embarrassing from my standpoint as a physician. The medical community should be embarrassed. They need to own up to what's happening with these numbers. And doctors need to get on these websites and really analyze things so that they can tell patients the truth. Because we're not getting it from our government physician the people responsible for this in our government, and it's sad.
Well, you can get the truth here. That's Dr. Jill Vecchio. And Jill, thanks so much for all the research that you've done on this.
Okay, take care, everybody.
Okay. And Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management, how are you doing this morning?
Oh, I'm still alive and kicking, Kim.
I'm glad to hear that. Hey, I wanted to jump over here. We talked a little bit about yield yesterday. And, you know, one place where people can get yield is dividends on stocks. But I'm not sure that people, you know, understand how they work. I think there's some confusion. So help us understand that, Jason McBride.
You know, that's a good point, Kim. I do get questions about how dividends work sometimes, and I do think there's some confusion out there, so sometimes it's good just to kind of go back to basics. So, Kim, let's say you have a company that pays $1 a share a year in a dividend. Now, most of the time they pay quarterly or monthly, but just for the sake of simplicity, we'll say they pay $1 a year total. Well, if the price on that stock right now is at $20, you simply take 1 divided by 20, and that would show you that that's a 5% dividend or a 5% annual yield if you were to buy the stock at 20. Does that make sense?
It does.
So if that same stock were to go up to $30 and they're still paying $1 a share a year on the dividend, well, now if you buy the stock at 30, you're not getting a 5% yield. You're getting like a 3.3% yield, Kim. And let's say that same stock were to drop from $20 down to $15 and still is paying the same dollar a share a year, well, the yield on that would be about 6.7%. Now, where I find people get confused sometimes is they think that if the price of the stock moves up or down, that changes the dollar amount of the dividend. So just because the stock goes from 20 to 30 doesn't mean the dividend automatically goes up from $1 to $1.50. Or if the stock drops, it doesn't drop from $1 down to 75 cents. Dividend changes are determined by the board of directors depending on, you know, how much they think that the company is able to pay after covering all their bills and everything else.
So there's really two ways that people can create wealth in the stock market. Then you can buy stocks that would appreciate in value, and of course that would create wealth. But then also you could be receiving yield off of these stocks, which also helps you create wealth. So there's really two different ways to do that in the stock market.
Yeah, that's right, Kim. And you can take your dividends as cash dividends. A lot of people that don't need the money for income, if they like the stock, they, you know, you could reinvest the dividends each quarter and buy a few more shares. You know, I do that sometimes with some of my holdings. And what I'll kind of tend to do is take cash when I think the stock price might be a little bit high, and then I might switch to reinvest when it's low and I think it's a real bargain and I can get more shares for cheap.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And so with these nuances within an investment portfolio is something that you and your colleagues at Presidential Wealth Management can help people with when they're looking at their own individual portfolios.
Yes, absolutely. And don't forget, dividends can be an important part of your investments, either for income or to cause growth from reinvestment, Kim.
So great options on that. So if people want to reach you, the best way to do that is to go to our mutual website. That's airpresidential.com. That's airpresidential.com. Or give Natalie a call over the switchboard after 7:30 at 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600 to talk to Jason and his colleagues over there at Presidential. Jason, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks, Kim.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. Also, we post all kinds of important information on Facebook as well. Thrilled to have on the line with me Tom Petrie. You know him. He is with Petrie Partners, which is an oil and gas investment banking firm with offices here and in Houston. And he's an energy expert and wanted to talk with you today. This is our health and hydrocarbon show. What is happening in the oil and gas market right now, Tom Petrie?
Well, there's a couple things that are happening that are pretty important. One, the steps that have been taken both by the U.S. and by OPEC, the OPEC players, and OPEC Plus, as it's called, because Russia's not an official member of OPEC, but they have taken appropriate actions to restabilize prices. Remember, when the falling apart in the first week of March occurred earlier this year, when MBS, the Crown Prince, and Vladimir Putin had their disagreement about what they could do to be supportive of lower oil prices, we were in the low 40s, right about where we are today, high 30s, low 40s. And when it became very public that there was a disagreement, we plunged and we saw $30 oil tested, we saw $20 oil tested, and then for that one brief roll-off period in hedging contracts, we actually saw a negative price for oil. That was unacceptable to everybody, including those whose inactions had really sponsored it, both Russia and the leaders of OPEC. So we're through that. Some other corrective action is very important that's been taken. And one of the things that the industry initiated was establishing some new indices that will look at the price of light sweet oil from the U.S. that goes on the water to international markets. And that those new indices are going in place, and they're going to give us another way to measure what's the value of U.S. oil produced on land in the United States but going to markets in South America in the Atlantic Basin of Europe and to Asia. And that, so we're on the road to recovery, but I think the upper limits of that will get us back, as I've said once or twice before, to the high 40s, much above 50, self-correcting forces are likely to kick in. So that part of it's going fine. Gas prices are recovering some as well because the rig count has come way down. We're at a fraction of where we were 6 months ago on rig count, and that means some tightness, both in drilling for gas wells, but in equally important, drilling for oil wells in the Permian Basin. And the lack of drilling there has eased, if you will, the gas oversupply in the U.S. So we're on the road to recovery, but it's not. I don't think it's going to be a V-shaped recovery from here. I think it'll be steady progress forward, very dependent, however, on how much economic recovery and global growth occurs the second half of this year and first half of next year.
And when you mentioned V-shaped recovery, you're talking about the oil and gas markets, correct?
I am. Yeah, I am. The point here, there are some who say, well, you know, there's even been speculation. We're going to see. We've had so much low activity and low capital spending, $100 oil's right around the corner. I take strong issue with that. Self-correcting forces will kick in at 70, 80, or 90 if we get that much of a self-correcting force at work, and probably will head off something like $100 oil, short of physical interruptions of oil because of the civil war in Libya, because of other things happening in the Middle East, because of what happened, what could happen, at least theoretically, in Iran, but unlikely to happen in a sharp way. So when I talk about lack of V-shape, I'm talking mainly about that. We may have a good, strong recovery economically and globally, but even with that, I still think there's reasons to be doubtful that we'll get a sustainable price much above 50 this year or the first half of next year.
At these prices, I've always heard about the National Strategic Oil Reserve. Is that full now, or what's going on with that?
That's a good question. There has been some purchasing going on there. We didn't have a lot to buy, but my recollection, and maybe a little hazy on this, but it was less than 100 million barrels, and I would guess that we bought maybe a third of that here in recent weeks. But because we're getting the recovery, remember, it wasn't that long ago we had $20 oil, then $25, $30, $35. So the incentive to be buying oil now in the high 30s, low 40s for the strategic reserve is much diminished from where it was. It was a no-brainer at $20 a barrel.
Well, and who makes that decision, Tom Petrie?
Well, I'm pretty sure it would be made in the Department of Energy and by the Secretary of the Treasury, but it would be put to the President for concurrence. Executive decisions in this area do require certain congressional approvals, and I think there's some standby approvals in place that would have enabled them to do more filling than they've actually done.
Okay.
But the actual execution is an executive decision.
Okay. Now, let's talk about oil and gas, affordable, reliable, and efficient energy. I think we take it for granted. I think people have not really thought about how that works, that we have this, and we take it for granted. But reliable, efficient, and affordable energy has helped women across the globe. It's helped women in third world countries, empowered them to get out of some of the menial tasks that they have to do every day, like gathering dung or wood to cook and heat their homes, water, you know, going for water. In first world countries, it has empowered women to go after their hopes and dreams, all kinds of opportunities. And I think that we take that for granted, Tom Petrie.
I would agree with you. And really, we're seeing it in the oil and gas sector. Actually, Hart Energy has an annual event where they honor now women executives in the U.S. Energy sector. It's much more common today to see women in prominent positions in the oil companies, in the private sector oil companies, something that was rare in the 60s and 70s, a little less so in the 80s, But in the 90s and the last decade, really a transformation has occurred in women who are both being technically trained in our best colleges with engineering degrees and other technical degrees in this area, and getting jobs with the major oil companies and with the large independents.
Well, and for somebody like me, you know, I come into the station quite early, but within a day I can, you know, with all of the benefits of reliable, efficient, and affordable energy, you know, I can run a business, I can, you know, wash all the clothes for the family, I can do the dishes, and all kinds of things that I take for granted. And it's all because of affordable, efficient, and reliable energy. And in the third world countries, as women free up their time and don't have to be gathering wood and dung and hauling water, they're able to better take care of their families. And I know that there's been like microcredit situations where they can start a little business. But reliable, efficient, and affordable energy is one of the bedrocks of that, Tom Petrie.
There's one other aspect to it as well. And the numbers are big. I've seen estimates that people who are burned, there's still people burning dung and wood, and the emissions involved with that are a real health hazard because they're often in enclosed spaces. And we're talking upwards of 900 to a billion people where that's still the case. And remember, on the planet, we're now at 7.5 billion people. And this is about a billion people who are still there, but can be freed up even further than has already been the case by virtue of the availability of natural gas, in particular, for cooking, heating, and a whole lot of things that are necessary. The other big aspect of this is the key role gas is going to have to play in the electrified market. You know, we have an amazing situation, quite noteworthy, that the most valuable car company today in the world, at least in the ones that are publicly traded, is Tesla. It doesn't produce the most cars by any means, but there's an infatuation with the electrified vehicle market and the electrified transportation market. Our nuclear generating capacity is inevitably going down because of the phobia of nuclear and, frankly, the lack of innovation in new nuclear technology. But for those plants going down, the main replacement is going to be natural gas. And it already is an important baseload for power generation. Again, with a big improvement in air emissions versus coal.
Well, and our automobiles have gotten so much cleaner than the 70s, and our skies have gotten so much cleaner. So, you know, the public policy, I've been very concerned about public policy as it's been trying to really constrain the oil and gas industry. And we're going to have a conversation in this next segment about that, because Joe Biden has come out with some of his ideas if he were to be elected president, and they certainly lean more to the left on that. So why don't we go to break, Tom Petrie, and just talk about what that could mean for us everyday hardworking people. This is Kim Munson. This is our Health and Hydrocarbon Show. On the line with me is Tom Petrie. He's with Petrie Partners, which is an oil and gas investment banking firm. And stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Now more than ever, it is important to have independent voices bringing truth and clarity to the issues facing us, our families, our communities, our state, our nation, and our world. The Kim Munson Show is one of those important voices. Kim is a truly independent entrepreneur. She purchases her broadcast time, which gives her total freedom in production of the show and scheduling of guests. If you'd like to support The Kim Munson Show, go to her website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com, and click on the contribute button under Kim's picture. Kim greatly appreciates your help and support.
Welcome back to The Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out my website. That is Kim Munson, MONSON.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Be sure and sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. On the line with me is Tom Petrie. This is our health and hydrocarbon show. And fossil fuels, oil and gas, has empowered more women across the globe to improve their lives, whether or not it's in third world countries, freeing up women from doing menial labor, to first world countries where women are freed up to pursue opportunities and other things in their lives. And so Tom Petrie, Joe Biden has just released kind of the big plan that he has if he were elected president. What does that mean for everyday hardworking Americans, and how would that affect our lives?
Well, if he becomes president and he staffs it the way it appears he's going to, it has significant adverse consequences. They're talking about a change in tax policy that'll be pretty heavy duty, and that's going to have a much broader effect than just on the energy industry. But the tax policies that were favorably enacted under the current president were really beneficial to the hydrocarbon recovery that we've had. And a reversal of that policy, and not only a reversal in terms of taking the tax on earnings up, and dramatically up, as we're hearing here in the last 24 to 48 hours, the increase is going to be large. But there's more and more reason to believe that something we heard about during the primaries could really end up being a problem as well, and that is the notion that Elizabeth Warren talks about of that itty-bitty tax rate on wealth, and she has no idea how you implement that. One of the problems with a wealth tax is you powerfully incentivize people to make judgments about what their wealth is, and so that itty-bitty tax, once it's enacted, inevitably grows because it always falls short of what they say they're going to get, and they're going to be very prominent or very forward-looking in how they spend the expected proceeds. So the wealth tax issue is and should be a big debate in the upcoming year. But if this happens, and the role that seems to be evolving for Elizabeth Warren in the financial sector and the tax policy sector is another concern.
Well, as we look at these different issues on the show, we look at them as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. And I recently did a podcast with a young scholar. He's now a conservative scholar. And he said that basically under Marxism, under socialism, that there's two things that occur. There is people lose their individuality, and there's the abolition of private property. And one of the ways that you do that is through tax policy. If people go out and they take risks, they create wealth, you know, they save, they invest, whatever that is, instead of
charitable activity.
Yeah, instead of rewarding them for that, because that creates all kinds of things. It's the American idea. A wealth tax actually takes that away. It abolishes their private property. It takes it via tax policy. It's much quieter than if somebody came in with guns and robbed your home. But in some ways, it's the same thing that happens to people. Their property has gone away. It just depends on how it's done.
You're right. And interestingly, literally just last week, I was looking through my library and pulled out a book I read decades ago, The Road to Serfdom. And we could revisit what Von Hayek talks about in The Road to Serfdom under the kind of policies that are being bandied about by this meaningful move to the left that is inherent in much of the policymaking that's being talked about in this election.
Well, and when you're looking at that kind of policy, it's not a policy that says we want to empower people to go out and create and, you know, prosper. It's really based more in envy, where, you know, one entity is taking what some other person took. So that looks like that's what's happening with the, you know, the Biden policies. It's interesting that that's coming out. What about the energy sector? What does Biden's policies look like for us? Because, you know, we've talked about it many times, efficient, affordable, and reliable energy empowers more people, regular people, to go after their hopes and dreams. So what does Biden say to that?
Well, in essence, he's really put a pretty high marker out there on climate change, setting an objective for much reduced emissions by 2050. I think there is a consensus that it is a worthy goal to have a long-term program for reduced emissions and a greater component for renewables and so on. But what's being put forth by AOC, who's now being advertised or identified as leading the think tank, the in-house think tank for this administration, for the Biden administration, on what they should be doing on climate change. They've talked about it. They've been public about it. The headlines that I've read talk about a $2 trillion price tag. And, you know, that word trillion just rolls off the tongue. But the unfortunate aspect of it, we used to say that about a billion here, a billion there, and pretty soon it adds up to real money. That same mindset seems to have infected many of our politicians, most especially in the Democratic Party. And the trillions, our government really did respond to the current coronavirus pretty effectively. The Triple P program for protecting people on their payrolls and so on was remarkably effective under Secretary Mnuchin. We'll see it continue to play out here at the balance of this year. And it was not inexpensive. It was enough billions to suddenly get into and begin to rival that old word, that easily pronounced word, trillion. And then, sure enough, when we get to $3 trillion administration, we suddenly find Nancy Pelosi saying another $3 trillion would be just about right. And this is, we're getting to a point where this notion that if trillion's easy to pronounce, it ought to be easy to enact in the U.S. And that's the simplicity of understanding of the real impact of what's being done. And the risk of overreaching in the name that that more is always better than less is beginning to approach us here. And I think that'll be an element if we have a Democratic administration coming out of this election.
Well, and there
inflation
seems
could return.
Probably. And it is amazing. We have gotten through this COVID-19 Wuhan virus reaction disruption. We've gotten through it. I mean, when you and I were talking about the oil markets back in March, there was a knot in my stomach about what was happening. And not that I don't still have a knot in my stomach, but, you know, we now have hindsight to see that we've been somewhat resilient, even with all that has happened, Tom Petrie. And so I'm optimistic about that, Tom.
Well, I am too. And even in some of the issues that are bad news, a company having to declare Chapter 11 bankruptcy is not good news. But there is an inherent self-correcting aspect to it. Much of the 23 announced bankruptcies that we've had in the independent sector so far involve very high rates of conversion of their debt into equity. The bondholders understand that one of the big mistakes that came out of the bankruptcies of 2015, when we had the Thanksgiving surprise and oil plummeted from 95 down to 26, the bondholder mindset this time around is much more sophisticated, number one, and they recognize it's in their self-interest to convert large amounts of their debt into equity, and then to make those companies viable enterprises because they're not over-levered, but that they can participate in the recovery cycle that is now evident to be underway. That's a very important development. And so there is good reason for you to be more optimistic than in, say, the dark days of March and April.
And it did seem pretty dark back then. And I had not realized that, but that is a really interesting component as well, that the bondholders are taking equity positions, which probably is really helping these companies survive and be ready as oil prices continue to move up.
Exactly.
Okay. We have just a few more minutes. I wanted to talk about the Denver Art Museum, something that you had mentioned to me. But before we move over to that, what is the kind of the big picture thing that you would like our listeners to hear today, Tom Petrie?
Well, I think what logically should be unfolding from here is that there'll be a rotation of interest. Right now, our market indices are pretty good. And today's announcement of Goldman Sachs on its earnings being way in excess of what was expected tells you that the financial sector has benefited, but we have to be sensitive to how much that involves a half dozen, just a little more than a handful of stocks in the high-tech sector driving the overall indices. And the logical play out from here is those other sectors that have been lagging the recovery so far, rotation of interest into those sectors is going to be an important prerequisite for this recovery to continue. The energy sector is one of the top candidates because it's been one of the bottom performers, mm-hmm. and most painfully infected by what we're dealing with. So I think I find myself much more constructive today, having seen that it was clear to even Russia and Saudi Arabia that they're competing for market share in the $20 market environment, $20 a barrel market environment, made no sense. And so I think they will stay very focused, and they will look to trigger self-correcting forces if we fall short on global economic growth. They'll be more disciplined. If we get too high too soon, I think they will also look not to let that happen and not to have that choke off economic growth as well.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. So nothing static. I think that's one thing that's to remember is things are always changing and there's always opportunity. So Tom Petrie, thank you so much for that. And then we've got just a couple of minutes left. You had mentioned something down at the Denver Art Museum, and you know, I talk about it. We need to be feeding our souls and our brains and our hearts. And this is something that you highly recommend. It's Natural Forces. It's a display by Winslow Homer and Frederick Remington. So just give us a brief description about that.
Sure. Yeah, the museum is now open. It's doing it with social distancing and everything, so you need to check what the rules are. But this is a great exhibition. It's called Natural Forces. It compares two of the greatest artists of the late 1800s, early 1900s, Frederick Remington and Winslow Homer. There are people who know art well who say, gee, that's an interesting combination. I wouldn't have thought of them being paired off. But we have it on now at the museum, and I went through it here recently. I'm working actually to have some other events for clients in the energy sector because I think it's really uplifting to the soul. You see something about America at the turn of the last century, not this most recent turn of the century, but a century before, at a time that the country was just beginning to recognize how much things were working for it, and these were two of the artists who captured that in a very, very special way. So I do recommend it to people. It's been organized by Thomas Smith at the Petrie Institute at the Denver Art Museum. It is a really fine show. There's Remington Nocturnes. There was a great Remington Nocturne show 20 years ago. A nice sub-sector of that Remington Nocturne show. Paintings at Night. The earlier one was called The Color of Night, and you'll see that. There's wonderful seascapes because Winslow Homer in Maine had his studio there, and he did, it's called Natural Forces because it's the forces of nature involving the ocean and involving the wide open West. So it's something that you go, you'll come away saying, I'm really glad I took some time. It gives you lots of reasons to think about why this country, with its empowerment of creative thinking, and not all of it top-down, but really bottoms-up, coming from the art community, coming from the open market, thinking of our financial sector and competition. All of those values are exhibited in this show.
Well, Tom Petrie, I'd highly recommend that. And Tom Petrie, Petrie Partners, thank you so much, and we will talk to you next month again.
I look forward to it. Thanks, Kim.
Have a great day. And our quote for today is Alexander Hamilton. He says, men give me credit for some genius. All the genius I have lies in this. When I have a subject in hand, I study it profoundly. Day and night, it is before me. My mind becomes pervaded with it. Then the effort that I have made is what people are pleased to call the fruit of genius. It is the fruit of labor and thought. So my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well. Live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America. And I don't want no one to cry, but tell